Okay, so this is volume 16, and we're in the middle of a message from November the 15th, 1923. This is for the record. Okay. And if you go back just to the heading for this, in order to reign upon the earth, the divine will wants to find somebody who would receive the divine will, who would understand the divine will, and who would love it for everybody. Okay, so that's the issue. And that's what he has been talking to Louisa about. So I think we begin with, on hearing this, I said to him, is that right?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. So Louisa said, my beloved good, my book says you're speaking. She actually means you're teaching. So that's an error of the translator. Your teaching confuses me. Even more, it annihilates me to the point that I feel like a little newborn whose members are not yet well formed. And therefore it's necessary to swaddle her. In other words, she's not really coping with what Jesus is saying. And while swaddling clothes are necessary for me so that I may be formed, you want to unswaddle me, and to do what? To make me stretch out my little baby hands and embrace your eternal will. So Louisa is just simply saying, it's too great, it's too big, it's too far above me, I'm too small, I'm too insignificant, and so on. My Jesus, don't you see, I cannot reach, I cannot grab it. I love the I cannot grab it bit. The image I have in my head reading that is of a child trying to grab a sunbeam. Okay. I'm too little, she said. And besides, if it pleases you so much that your will reign upon the earth, why have you waited so long? Did you close the front doors? And why, when you came upon the earth, did you not do both things yourself? Now, that's perfectly logical stuff. That is, why didn't you do the redemption and the fiat voluntas tua on earth as in heaven? You had strong and long arms to be able to embrace your endless will. See, O Jesus, mine are weak and short. How can I do that? Now, her question to Jesus is very important because he wants to say to us, you desire it and I'll do it, because he alone can do it. So he says, poor little child, you are right. My teaching confuses you. The light of my will eclipses you and renders you the true newborn of my will. Come into my arms. I will swaddle you with the swaddling clothes of my own will. And my will may, and it may strengthen your members with its strength. In this way, it will be easy for you to clasp with your little arms the eternal will. Now, when you get into the volumes above volume 20, she's doing it. And she's doing it without even hesitating. Okay, so with this whole piece, just put John 15:5, you can do nothing by ourselves. And Philippians 4:13, oops, come on. Sorry, I was just having a swinging time. Philippians 4:13, that you can do it with Christ. By ourselves, we can't. Okay, so it will be easy for you. Okay, so let's come down to the next paragraph. And what the Lord is going to explain is we can only take this in slowly. Do you all agree with that?
Yes.
Yeah, I certainly do anyway. I've been teaching it in 2011 and I go back to earlier volumes and it's the same as if I was reading it for the first time and I say to myself, but surely you read that before. It's as new as if I was reading it for the first time. So I flung myself, Louisa said, into his arms to let Jesus do with me whatever he wanted. Then again, he added, I could very well have done both things myself when I came upon the earth, but the creature's not capable of receiving the work of her creator all at once. He has given 2,000 years for the church to absorb everything to do with redemption. And as you know, there are millions of people still out there who haven't benefited yet. He said, I could have done it. And I myself delight in giving always new surprises. You can see the extraordinary way he describes God as delighting in giving and that love lives by giving. And besides, the creature had profaned her her taste with her own will. I want to give you Isaiah 29, verses 13 and 14 there. Now, when my book says taste, it's really talking about interior desires, okay? Our desires had been profaned by our own will. In other words, you wanted the wrong things. And you can see this very easily in children who will want things that are not good for them. And because you love them more than they love themselves, or then because of their understanding is lacking, you have to teach them that the things you are offering them is much greater than what they actually want. They want the candy floss and you want to give them dinner, just to give you an example. And you know yourself, you've had to hide the sweets to get the dinner eaten. So the creature caused the breath of her soul to stink. Look at the very strong language. With so many ugly things as to be disgusting to me. She had reached the point of having a desire for the most revolting things, to the point of letting a rotten fluid flow over the three powers of her soul. Remember Jesus falling into the Kedron River to repair this. And I want to give you a little warning. We need to be careful about who you give divine will material to. I had a phone call from a lady the other day who, for the first time, read a piece of the Hours of the Passion, and she picked up the bit where Jesus fell into the Kedron River, and she rang me in total anger and said, "This is utterly disgraceful." And I was to blame because I teach this stuff. There was no getting through to her at all. The description of Jesus being nauseating to himself and everybody else, as far as she was concerned, was a total contradiction of his person and all the rest of it. It would have taken an amount of time to try and explain things to her. She slapped the phone down when I tried to say anything. Total anger. So I just said, material in wrong hands. The person is not ready. We just have to be very careful. We have to be very careful. So we have accepted the fact that Jesus allowed himself to fall into the Kedron River in order to make reparation for all this filth that he's actually talking about, and that he came out of the Kedron River. The nauseating bit was that he was a pictorial version of what sin looks like. He had it on the outside, we have it on the inside. Okay. And it would have taken the rest of the day to get that across to the person who phoned me. So the three powers of the soul then have had this rotten fluid, as Jesus calls it. Now, the three powers of the soul are the intellect, the memory and the will. So if they are fed with this rotten food, then we're not going to desire the right things. We're not going to give ourselves soul food. What I call soul food is the manna of God's word, the manna of the Eucharist and personal prayer that enables you to take it in. Okay. So such that her nobility could no longer be recognized. That's graphically described as Jesus not being recognized coming out of that river. Therefore, first I had to take care of all of this with my redemption, giving her, that is the soul, all the remedies, giving all these evils the bath of my blood in order to wash them. That's why I think it's extremely important to fuse and enter into Jesus every day, take his precious blood and wash the human race and wash the souls in purgatory with it. I think it's extremely important. Had I wanted to do both things, he said, since man was so dirty, blind and deaf. Now that's Isaiah chapter 6, verses 9 to 10. Isaiah, the Lord told Isaiah that the people were so blind that they would see and never perceive, hear and hear and never understand, and their hearts had grown coarse with sin and so on. And the four Gospels picked that up as an explanation for redemption. what precisely it was that Jesus had to do. And when you examine Jesus's miracles, he went down the route of opening the eyes of the blind, unstopping the ears of the deaf, loosening the tongues and helping people to walk. He literally, physically did the what we call the prophetic parables on people, so that his gospel was written into the very flesh of human beings who heard it. Okay. So he said, had I wanted to do both things, since man was so dirty, blind and deaf, rendered so by his human will, he would not have had the eyes of the intelligence to understand my will. Now, we know that for people who are on the outside of religion, they don't even know how to enter a church properly. They don't know how to recognize the presence of the Lord. They don't know how to make contact with him. You give them a spiritual book, they don't understand it. They just don't grasp it at all. That's the understanding is darkened. When we come into a prayer life and we expose ourselves on a daily basis to the presence of the Lord and his grace, he enlightens us. And that's why the whole of spirituality is called enlightenment. That is light given to your intelligence and to your understanding. So for the lack of intelligence, I want to give you Matthew 13, verses 14 to 15, where Jesus said to the Pharisees that these people honour me with lip service, but their hearts are far from me. Heart meaning your own person. Matthew 13, verses 14 to 15. So, because we have been rendered so dirty and blind by the human will, he would not have had the eyes of the intelligence to understand my will, nor the ears to listen to it, nor the heart to receive it. In other words, we have to offer this to people who are disposed and who are ready. And my will, not being understood and finding no place in which to dwell, would have returned back to heaven. That's your Hebrews 12:14. Nothing unholy or unworthy can enter the presence of God. And if he can't find a place on earth, he goes back to heaven. Because he has told us a number of times already that the only reason why he could become incarnate was that his mother was living fully in the divine will, and therefore he had a home on earth in her heart. Okay. Therefore, it was necessary that man understand the goods of redemption first, so as to dispose himself. Now, A is that the human race needed a bath of in the precious blood in order to redeem them. B is that in using all the gifts and graces of redemption, we gradually become disposed to the receiving the gift of the fiat voluntas tua, sicut in cielo et in terra. The same would have happened with you also, Jesus said, if at the beginning, when I began to speak to you, I had spoken to you about my will, you'd not have understood. So you go back to volume one, and Jesus is only talking to Louisa about her relationship with him and how to get closer to him and all the rules and regulations of the spiritual life and everything, when he has her absolutely, absolutely grounded in the spiritual life. And he's brought her to the fullness of three unions with him. And he has guided her in volumes 1 to 4 through these foundations. He gradually begins to build it in volumes 5 to 10. And she's already living divine will before he actually begins to teach her about it. So that when he says something to her about it, he can she can receive it and understand it because she has experienced it. Now, the same thing is happening for us, that we're trying to live the divine will, and the teaching of Louisa is being exposed to us gradually. So, and the more you live the divine will, the more you grasp it. But it's very important that if you come across, personally come across something that you don't grasp, that you continue on. Because if you go back to it, you'll understand it. That's why going back to the early volumes is very, very important. So he said that the same thing has happened to you. That's Louisa. When I began to speak to you, you wouldn't have understood if I spoke about my will. I would have behaved like a teacher who, instead of teaching the first letters of the alphabet to his disciple, wanted to teach them the sciences and foreign languages. The way I put that is, you don't teach trigonometry in the primary school to little ones. You teach them things that their minds can actually receive. So this is a growth in understanding. Poor boy, that's the student, he would get confused and he would learn nothing. So these are the first steps. Watch this now. This is very carefully presented. I wanted to speak to you about number one, sufferings. Number two, virtues. This is all volumes 1 to 10. Things that are more accessible and more tangible for human nature, and which can be called the alphabet of the Christian life, A, B, and C. Now, we teach the alphabet when children are very young. This is the language of the exile. That means it's earthly language. And it is the language of those who aspire to the celestial fatherland. Note the word aspire. They're not there. If you're on a journey from Belfast to Cork, for most of the time, you're neither in Belfast nor Cork. You're somewhere in between. So people who aspire to the celestial fatherland. On the other hand, my will is the language of heaven. Now, this is very, very important for anyone who's teaching. My will is the language of heaven. So what I've just read as the first steps there, that is what I call ordinary spirituality. And you have to have that before you go into the divine will. Because if you don't have that, you've nothing to step into in the divine will. On the other hand, my will is the language of heaven. And it begins where all other sciences and virtues end. Now, sciences is usually a translation of the word knowledge. Because you see, we have a different meaning for sciences, meaning the natural sciences. My will is the queen, which dominates everything and crowns everyone in such a way that before the sanctity of my will, all other virtues shrink and tremble. So our very best efforts to be holy and all the rest of it is nothing before the divine will. This is why I wanted to act as your teacher of the alphabet first. Now, why did he do it? To put a big why in the margin there. Why did he do it? One, to dispose your intelligence. Two, to move on to act as your celestial and divine teacher. That's Deuteronomy 32:15. The Lord alone was her guide. Deuteronomy 32:15. So the second thing, the first one was to dispose you, and the second thing then was to move on and act as your celestial and divine teacher, who only knows about the language of the fatherland and of the highest knowledge which my will contains. First, I had to remove from you the taste, meaning desire, for anything, because the human will has this poison. We desire the wrong things. It makes one lose the desire for the divine will. So if we stay in the human will, it keeps away from you the desire to go into the divine will. The human will, when it's put aside, then the desire for the divine will emerges. In all created things, since they had come out of me, I had placed a divine desire. But by doing her will, even in holy things, I find that very interesting. That's the kind of thing now I put a circle around. How can you do your own will in holy things? You'll pray if you feel like it. And you'll pray if you're enjoying it. You'll go to church if you're in the mood. Okay. I just take perfectly obvious examples. So if she's doing her own will, even in holy things, the soul does not find this desire for the divine will. So, in order to let you enjoy the desire of my will alone, I am attentive not to let you taste anything else, and I dispose you to receive the most sublime lessons about my will. Now, if she's not actively putting aside her own will, she's not going to be able to take the revelations about the divine will. And that's why I've said from the very beginning, our motto has to be, not my will, but thine be done. If this was necessary for you, it is even more necessary for the whole church, because people are at all stages, to which I had to make known the minor things first, and then the greatest of all, which is my will. Okay, so let's go into November the 20th, 1923. Jesus assures Louisa in her fears, because in shifting from her old way of doing things as victim soul and suffering into this completely new way of opening up the divine will, nobody else knows about it. Therefore, the priest can't help her, the church can't help her, and therefore she's moving out into completely unknown territory. She's blazing a trail for everybody else. So she has all the fears, all the anxieties, all the difficulties. So Jesus talks to her on this level. So Louisa said, I felt a fear about what I was writing, and I thought to myself, what will be my confusion on the day of judgment? Instead of it being my Jesus, the one who speaks to me, it was some fantasy or the infernal enemy. Now, Jesus is going to talk about how you discern the truth. This is terribly important. And he uses quite a number of messages to give us discernment. My Jesus, she said, I feel I am dying at the mere thought of it, and you know the great repugnance I feel in writing. If it wasn't for blessed obedience, I would not have written a single word. And I felt such confusion that if I had it in my power, I would have burnt everything up. Can you imagine? So she has no idea what God is going to do with this material. Okay. Now, what Jesus is going to tell her in the next paragraph is actually desperately important. I know this sounds a bit sexist and everything, particularly for women, because we can get sidetracked on feelings. And you can think that your feelings are facts. Okay. So what Jesus is going to do with her here is distinguish your feelings from your facts. He's done this many times before. Like, for example, she says, I'm bad. And he says, have you moved out of my will? No. Can you give me a list of your sins? No, I can't. Well, if you haven't sinned and if you haven't moved out of my will, then you're still in it. Stay with facts, not with feelings. So when Louisa says, I'm bad, I'll give you an Irish expression for it. And that is, I'm not feeling wonderful today. The mood isn't great today. And so if you determine the rightness or wrongness by that feeling, you're not dealing with reality. Is that okay? The reality is what you decide to do with everything. Okay? And if, regardless of your mood, you are doing the will of God to the best of your ability and you're carrying out your duties to the best of your ability and you're putting up with other human beings to the best of your ability, you're all right. Why do I say put up with them? Because that's what St. Paul says, put up with each other. Sometimes it's the only thing we can do. So now, while I was in this state, you see, Louisa is Italian and she's a woman. And both things together make problems, because Italians, whether they're male or female, are very emotional people. And if they're female, it's even worse. I've dealt with both. While I was in this state, my adorable Jesus came out from within my interior. That means he's there. There's nothing wrong. The kingdom of God is within you. That's Luke 17:21. So that's the first fact. And she's been told endlessly that if there was something wrong, namely if she had sinned, that he wouldn't be there. He would go. So he came out from within my interior as a little child, and placing his little head upon my shoulder, he clung to my face and he said to me, "My daughter, why do you fear? You must not be concerned about thoughts, but about facts." In other words, not the stuff that's running through your head, but the reality of what you actually do. So, is it perhaps not true that your will, embracing mine, wants to find everybody in order to bind them to my will, to retie all the broken bonds between the human will and the divine, exposing yourself to defend and excuse the creatures and to repair the creator? This is a fact in you. So the first fact is he came out from her interior. And this is the second one. And for that, I want to give you Psalm 106, verse 23. Moses stood in the breach between God and the sinful people in order to defend God's glory on the one side and try and defend the people on the other. Okay, and that's the position of a victim soul. Now, the next thing is, which will be number three, is it perhaps not true that you swore that you wanted to live in my will and you gave your fiat? That, yes, is a chain for you that keeps you bound within my will. And as you take delight in it, it makes you abhor the shadow of your own will. This is a fact. So there's the next number. And then many other things which you know. If you were writing, but the life, the facts of what you write were not in you. In other words, if the reality of what you're writing about was not experienced by you, it would be different. You'd be writing plain theory. Then you could have feared, he said, and I would have given you neither strength nor light nor assistance. On the contrary, you would have become dull and you would not have gone any further. Dull means lacking in understanding. And you can't get very far in the divine will if you don't understand. Isn't that correct? And the very reason why we study the material is to grow in understanding. So if the Lord ever tells you you're dull, you're in trouble. Because you couldn't go any further. Therefore, he said, calm yourself and continue to live as though kneaded in my will. I love that, the kneading. You're absolutely caught up. In order to expand the boundaries of your human will within mine. See, my humanity was also little, that is, by comparison with the divinity. And it kept growing as long as though kneaded in the divine will, in such a way that as I would grow, so would my human will, living together with the divine, expand its boundaries within the will of the eternal one. Now, he would grow in understanding. That's Luke 2:40, that he grew in age and wisdom and grace, remember, before God and man. There's a chair up here for you, Joe. And would prepare the redemption and the fiat voluntas tua on earth as in heaven. And you, don't you want to follow my growth, but your flight in my will? So there's the next thing. She's growing in knowledge and understanding of the divine will, which can't happen if she's outside of it. So, my will is not only life, but it is the very air of the soul. I've told you many times before that the sacred name, which the Jewish people will not pronounce out of reverence, is this. If you just look at me for a minute, it's Yahweh, my breath. He is my very breath. And so for God to breathe on us is extremely important, because you have it in Genesis 2:7 that God breathed the breath into the human being, and man became a living being. Okay, so he is my very breath. He is what makes me a living being. He is what makes me what I am. And if the air is missing to life, one's nature begins to decline, and breathing is hampered, the heart is hindered in its beating, the blood circulation is irregular, the intelligence becomes numb, the eye almost lifeless, the voice choked, and the strength is lost. What is it that casts so much chaos into human life? It's the lack of air. I mean, that's very interesting, isn't it? So a balsamic air can restore order and vigour to one's nature. Now, this air is that the divine will is this air, bringing back this balsamic air into us, enabling us to live. So all this is caused, all this problem is caused by one's own will, which is like bad air. It produces chaos, irregularity, weakness, and the decline of what is good in the soul. And if it's not helped with the celestial air of my will, which makes everything rise again, fortifies, orders, and sanctifies everything, the human life will be a life half extinguished, disordered, on the slope of evil. That's very well described, isn't it? So the discernment is that if you're in the divine will, you're growing, and you're growing towards fullness, order, and the divine order. If you're outside of the divine will, you're going back into the human will and into chaos and into disorder. Okay. Now, in a previous life when I used to teach chemistry to people, you wouldn't associate me with that at all. One of the things that I used to try and say to the children over and above what you had to teach them was to try and get behind the thing and tell them something. And I said, look, you can see from what I'm demonstrating to you that molecules either go towards order or fall back into chaos. And if it goes towards order, it'll create new things and all the rest of it. It's either, we call the chaos entropy when you're dealing with chemistry. So it's either order or entropy. I said, remember that forever. I said, if you forget everything I've taught you, remember we either go forward and become something greater and greater, or we fall back into absolute chaos. This is exactly what you've been told here. And what I love about it is that you can demonstrate this from different disciplines. You know, I'm sure if you're teaching some other discipline, you'd be able to demonstrate it as well. So you're either going forward towards growth or back into disintegration. So I want to pick up now in November the 24th, 1923. And we're going to get the story of the divine will. This should be one of the seminars. Okay. This is the story of the divine will. I was doing the hour of the passion in which my sorrowful mother received her son dead in her arms and placed him in the sepulchre. And in my interior, I was saying, my mother, together with Jesus, I place all souls into your arms so that you may recognize them all as your children. Jesus had placed all of them in her arms from the cross. That's John 19, 26 and 27. Mother, behold your son. Louisa says, inscribe them one by one into your heart and place them inside the wounds of Jesus. Notice that one by one, each person is of incredible value to the Lord. They are the children of your immense sorrow. And this is enough for you to recognize them and to love them. And I want to place all generations in the supreme will. Now, notice that's the thing we're doing all the time in our prayer, so that no one may be missing. And in the name of all, I give you comfort, compassion, and divine relief. Now, all the plurals are not required in English. Now, while I was saying this, my sweet Jesus moved in my interior and he told me, my daughter, if you knew with what food my sorrowful mother nourished all these children, And he doesn't finish the sentence. If you only knew is the way we put it. And Louisa said, what was it? And he said again, since you are my little one, chosen by me for the mission of my will, and you live in that fiat in which you were created, I want to make known to you the story of my eternal will. Its joys, its sorrows, its effects, its immense value, what it did, what it received, and the one who took to heart its defence. The little ones are more attentive in listening to me. That's Matthew 18, 1 to 3. You've got to become like these little ones. You remember he said that? The little ones are more attentive to listening to me because their minds are not filled with other things. They are as though empty of everything. You can put beside that Psalm 131, my soul is like a weaned child on its mother's lap. It's not worried about who's fighting the war in Syria. Psalm 131. The little ones are as though empty of everything. And if one wants to give them a different food, they feel disgusted because being little, they are used to taking only the milk of my will. Now, the image there is of the child in its mother's arms, used to taking the mother's own substance and feeding directly from the mother's substance. And what Jesus is moving to try and tell us is that in the divine will, each one of us draws from the very substance of God. So we're not taking diluted food from other people, no matter how great they are. So they're only used to taking the milk of my will, which more than a loving mother keeps them attached to its divine breast to nourish them abundantly. You've probably noticed that the more you go into the divine will, the less you can take from other sources. Have you noticed?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Simply because the other sources are so dilute by comparison. And these little ones remain with their little mouths opened, waiting for the milk of my teachings. So you see, it was correct to call it teachings and not speaking. And I enjoy myself very much. Oh, how beautiful it is to see them smiling and rejoicing or crying in hearing me narrate the story of my will. So he's going to tell us in the next paragraph, he's going to tell us the story. But the thing he wants to tell us is that God is veiled in the universe. God can only make things like himself. So there's something about the universe that we've got to really look at. Well then, the origin of my will is eternal, as anything to do with God is eternal. Never did sorrow enter into it. Among the divine persons, this will was in the highest accord. Even more, it was only one will. So if you have three persons with one will, you have absolute happiness. If you've got a family with five persons and five different wills, they can all be battling each other. Maybe not all the time, but some of the times you can have hurricanes. So among the divine persons, this will was in highest accord. Even more, it was one. In each act it emitted both ad intra, that's internally, and ad extra, that's the works of creation. It gave us infinite joys, new contentments, and immense happiness. And when we wanted to issue the machine of creation, I love that expression. In other words, you made a machine and you run it. And you alone, if you have bought a machine, like if I buy a dishwasher, the manufacturer of the dishwasher has written a little booklet. This is how it's made. This is how it works. If this doesn't work, try troubleshooting this way and blah, blah, blah. And if in the end nothing works, call us. That's the Bible. It's God's manufacturer's handbook. And if only people would see the Bible as God's manufacturer's handbook, this is how you work and this is how the universe works and this is what happens if you go out of my will and all the rest of it, and please contact us. Isn't it very good? The manufacturer's handbook. So when we wanted to issue the machine of creation, how much glory, how many harmonies and honour did it not give to us? As soon as the fiat was released, this fiat diffused or released throughout the universe our beauty, our light, our power, our order, our harmony, our love, our sanctity, our everything. That's why I think looking at some astronomy programs would do you good. Just looking at the sheer magnificence and beauty of what is, you're seeing. And we remained glorified in our own virtues in seeing by means of our fiat. Now, all they had to do was want it. That's this fiat. Yes. And it works. Just one simple yes. Isn't that incredible? A yes from the three divine persons. Our will did not stop. Swollen with love as it was, it wanted to create man. And you know his story, and therefore I move forward. It was he who caused the first sorrow to my will. Now, this has been very carefully drafted, and you've been told everything is immense happiness. The one thing God had never experienced was sorrow. And the one thing that man gave to God was sorrow. And when you read the Bible, we do nothing but give him lamentations and sorrow. Okay, it's really incredible. And if you look at the passion of Jesus, I mean, look what humanity did to God. It's unbelievable. So you would understand why in the Old Testament, God would not give them his name. They'd destroy him if they could. They, meaning us. So man tried to embitter the one who loved him so much and who had made him happy. My will wept more than a tender mother weeping for the first time in eternity. We just don't realise what we've done. Okay, the first time. And weeping more than a tender mother who weeps over her son who is crippled and blind only because he withdrew from the will of his mother. So the cause of the crippling and the blindness, which you get in the whole story of the fall of Adam, is the withdrawal of the human will from the divine. My will wanted to be the first actor in man. We usually say the first mover. God is the prime mover. Okay, that's what the church says. For nothing else but to give him new surprises of love, joy, happiness, light and riches. It wanted to always give. So God wanted to give us joy, we gave him sorrow. He gave us life, we gave him death. Isn't it unbelievable? And this is why the divine will wanted to act in order to be able to always give, because love lives by giving. That's the essence of love. You can't love and not give. It doesn't make sense. But man wanted to do his own will and he broke it from the divine. If only he had never done that. So there's the lament coming from God. So what happened? My will withdrew. Now, this is the first, this is the worst punishment that God can give us. If you take a 2-year-old having terrible tantrums, which causes real problems for parents, but if the parent withdraws from the child and leaves them, that's the absolute worst punishment you can give the child. It causes terror. Okay. When you go to Ezekiel chapters 10 and 11, you read about God leaving the temple in Jerusalem because of the sin of his people. And on that particular occasion, they actually repented. So he came back in chapter 11. Okay. So for God to withdraw from us is the worst possible thing. So my will withdrew. So if you want something to read on that as well, read Romans chapter 1, where three times Paul says that because of the terrible corruption in the city of Rome, particularly, that God abandoned them, God abandoned them, God abandoned them. He says it three times, and three times in the scriptures is absolutely dire. So once the divine will withdrew, he fell into the abyss of all evils. Why? He doesn't have grace. He doesn't have the divine will. And you have to put John 15:5, without him, we can do nothing. One was needed who, now in order to rejoin these human wills, one was needed who would contain a divine will within himself. In order to be able to unify a divine will and a human will, somebody had to have both. Therefore, since I, the eternal word, loved this man with an eternal love, that is a quotation from Jeremiah 31, verse 3. I have loved you with an everlasting love, and I'm constant in my affection for you. We, the divine persons, decreed together that I was to take on human flesh in order to come and save him and to rejoin the two broken wills. But where to descend? Who would be the one who would lend her flesh to her creator? Now, before you turn the page, I want you to put Hosea 11, 1 to 9. Where the Lord is grieving and wants to redeem, but getting no help from the ones he will redeem. And what he wants to, he's going to be talking about love lives by giving in the next paragraph. And he's going to tell us that God gives to us by grace what he is by nature. That's an incredible thing. God gives to us by grace what he is by nature. And so for that, you use Psalm 8. What is man that you would even think about him, and yet you made him little less than a god? With glory and honour you crowned him, giving him power over the works of your hands. And you have Psalm, I think it's 86. Two, think it's that. I said, you are gods, all of you, sons of the Most High. Sons of the Most High are God's own personal army. So this is why we chose one creature. And by virtue of the foreseen merits of the future Redeemer, which the church has taught us from day one, that the Immaculate Conception is due to the future merits of the Redeemer. And therefore, that our Blessed Mother was redeemed more than all the rest of us, because she benefited most from it. Due to the foreseen merits of the future Redeemer, she was exempted from original sin. That's pure church teaching there. Her will and ours were one. It was this celestial creature that understood the story of our will. We narrated everything to her as to a little one. And of course, you hear elsewhere that God related to her instantly. I mean, you wouldn't even know she was there when he was relating all this to her. We narrated everything to her as to a little one. The sorrow of our will and how by breaking his will from ours, ungrateful man. Now, the one depiction of the human race that is consistent with the 36 volumes is that we are ungrateful. Ungrateful man had constrained our will within the divine circle. In other words, with our rebellion, man refused to allow God to be free to act in us. And with our surrender to the divine will, we're actually allowing God to be free to work in us. Make sure you say to the Lord frequently, I throw myself into my nothingness and I want that to flow in your allness so that you have the freedom to do what you want with me. Just make sure we say it frequently. Because that's the opposite of what Adam did. Okay. So ungrateful man had constrained our will within the divine circle, almost hampering it in its designs, preventing it from communicating to him its goods and the purpose for which he had been created. Now notice, we did the preventing. The Lord wanted to do the giving. For us, that is for the three divine persons. To give is to make ourselves happy, as well as to make the one who receives from us happy as well. For us, to give is to enrich without being impoverished. For us, it is to give what we are by nature, forming it in the creature by grace. Isn't that absolutely amazing? I said you are gods, all of you sons of the Most High. You've made us little less than a god. With glory and honour you've crowned us. For us, it is to go out of ourselves to give what we possess. By giving, our love pours itself out and our will makes feast. If we were not to give, why would we form the creation? So the mere being unable to give to our children, to our dear images, Romans 8, 28 to 30. Romans 8, 28 to 30. Was like a mourning for our supreme will. Just in seeing man operate, speak, walk without the connection of our will. Now, he was putting man as Lord of the earth, and the Lord of the earth wasn't letting the Lord do anything. It's crazy stuff. That's like saying you have appointed a CEO to manage your estate, and the CEO doesn't allow you any freedom. You only happen to be the owner. And you're only the boss of this guy. And you're the source of his salary and absolutely everything. He doesn't let you do anything. You see, human beings would sack him, wouldn't they? Yeah, but the patience of the Lord is unbelievable. Just in seeing man operate and speak and walk without the connection of our will, because it had been broken by him, not by the Lord, and that currents of grace, light, sanctity, knowledge, etc., would run to him had he been with us, but could not. Our will took the attitude of sorrow. So man created sorrow for God. Or let me put it the other way. Man is God's heartbreak. In each act of the creature, there was a sorrow for us, in every single one of them, because we saw that act empty of divine value. Now, this is what is the issue. They're doing all this stuff and it has absolutely no value. It's a bit like you having a child in school and the child has to do this leaving certificate to get anywhere in society. And they will read and study anything except what they have to do for their exam. And you know, they're wasting their time. They're wasting this precious stage of their lives. And you have the frustration and the sorrow of seeing that. I presume I'm talking English to you. We saw that act, Jesus said, empty of divine value. We saw it as without beauty and without sanctity, therefore wasted. Completely dissimilar from our acts. Total waste. Oh, how the celestial little one understood this highest sorrow of ours. That's Blessed Mother. And the great evil of man in withdrawing from our will. Oh, how many times she cried hot tears. I love that expression. Because of our sorrow. In other words, her love for God is at an absolutely extraordinary level. And because of the great misfortune of man. Therefore, fearing, she did not want to concede even one act of her life to her own will. And this is why she remained so very little. That means she remained in her nothingness and let God be everything. So just put nothingness there. And you take Luke chapter 1, verses 46 to 49. You have done great things for this little one, and all the glory is for him. So this is why she remained little or in her nothingness, because her will had no life in her. How could she become grown up? Now, grown up means independent of God. There is, that's what you have to grasp. I remember there was a program on RTE some years ago in which a lady was asked to speak on the Our Father. Probably one of the last times they put anything religious on. And they, typical of RTE, they put somebody to counteract her. That's in case if you do any good, it's going to be completely counteracted. And the bit I remember very clearly, because I knew the speaker, I just don't want to say who she is. She spoke about this wonderful relationship that we have with God as father and child. And the woman who was opposing her said, well, the rest of us have grown up. We don't need this stupid nonsense of being a child all your life. And she absolutely drowned her out. And unfortunately, the speaker wasn't able to deal with it. It was really, really sad. But it's this grown up thing. And the person counteracting her said, we don't need a God like that, that you have to suck his breast. And it's this thing, I'm independent, I can do it myself, I'm my own person, I'm my own God, I have myself to rely on. Isn't it frightening? Mm. That's what's talked about here, about being little and being grown up. The grown up thing is that you are independent of God. And therefore you wouldn't like to be in that position. But what she did not do, our will did. Number one, it raised her all beautiful, holy and divine. Our will enriched her so much as to make her the greatest of all. She was the prodigy of our will. Now that poor woman on that programme who said, I don't need a God like that and I don't need anybody like that. I'm an adult. I am totally self-sufficient to myself. She wouldn't know anything about this beauty or this privilege or the wonder of God filling you with himself. And so our Blessed Mother was a prodigy of the divine will, a prodigy of grace, beauty and sanctity. But she remained always little. That's the bit that adults find difficult, because we like being independent. So much so that she would never descend from our arms, which is Psalm 131 again. And taking to heart our defence, she repaid all the sorrowful acts of our supreme will. So there you have the reparation that's involved in divine will. And she did it from the beginning. And not only was she completely in order with our will, but she made all the acts of creatures her own, absorbing into herself all our will rejected by them, which is what we do in divine will prayer as well. She repaired it, she loved it, and keeping it as though deposited within her virginal heart, she prepared the food of our will for creatures. Can I finish this one? Okay. So, do you see then, Jesus said, for that I want to give you Judith, the book of Judith, chapter 15, verses 10 to 11. We sing this in Latin, if you ever remember the Latin, Tu Gloria, Jerusalem, Tu Letizia, Israel. Anybody remember it?
Yes.
Tu Gloria, Jerusalem, Tu Letizia, Israel, Tu Honorificentia, Populi Nostri. Don't remember it? Oh dear, that's one of the great greats of the Catholic Church. You are the glory of Jerusalem, you are the joy of Israel, you are the honour of our people. And that is what was said to Judith after she killed Holofernes. And the Church attributes it to our Blessed Mother correctly after she stamped the serpent, the real enemy. Holofernes was only a symbol of the enemy. Okay. So do you see then with what food this most loving mother nourishes her children? It cost her all of her life given to the Lord completely. It cost her unheard of pains, which you read about in the Hours of the Passion and also in Our Blessed Mother in the Divine Will, and the very life of her son, to form within herself the abundant deposit of this food of my will, and to keep it ready to nourish all of her children as a tender and loving mother. So in the spirituality of the divine will, it's absolutely essential to have a relationship with this mother. She could not love her children more. By giving them this food, her love had reached the ultimate degree. Therefore, among the many titles that she has, the most beautiful title that could be given to her is that of Mother and Queen of the Divine Will. I dare say that'll be recognised someday. Now, my daughter, if my mother did this for the work of redemption, so must you do it for the work of the Fiat Voluntas Tua. Your will must have no life in you. In other words, our will must be put aside. And making all the acts of my will for each creature your own. You will deposit them within yourself, and while repaying my will in the name of all, you will form within yourself all the necessary food to nourish all generations with the food of my will. Isn't that absolutely divine? Each saying, each effect, each additional knowledge about it will be one more desire, taste, that you will find in this food in such a way that you will eat it with avidity. Everything I tell you about my volition will serve to whet their appetite. That's us, the ones coming after her, so that they may take no other food at the cost of any sacrifice. If a food were said to be good to restore one's strength, to heal the sick, to contain all tastes and even more to give life and to embellish and to make one happy, who could not make any sacrifice in order to take this food? So it will be with our will. So you learn rather quickly that other foods that you might have been feeding on earlier, that you let it go and you feed on the divine will, that it's completely satisfying. In order to make the divine will loved and desired, knowledge is necessary. See the wonderful statement there. Therefore, be attentive. Receive within yourself this deposit of my will, so that as a second mother, and we will all be little mothers of the human race, you may prepare the food for our children. In doing so, you will imitate my mother. It will cost you much as well. But in the face of my will, any sacrifice will seem nothing to you. Do it as a little one. Now notice he... Peter 1, 5 to 9. The Lord resists the proud and always favours the humble. Do it as a little one, never descend from my arms, and I will continue to narrate to you the story of my will. Okay, so we'll leave it there for tonight.